busy last week and a half here, and as all of your listeners know, I mean, we've obviously had some critical incidents now in Fargo and in Moorhead, and so I think, you know, that's been a lot of talk in the media right now. And I'm going to be honest with you guys, I jumped in the it was a Saturday night. I grabbed a couple of our sheriff's quick response team members, and I told them to meet me at the law enforcement center here at 11:30, and we jumped in my car and we went downtown. And I wanted to observe the behaviors down there. I wanted to get a lay of the land, see where people were hanging out, the type of activities that were being done down there. So I worked down there with my staff from 11:30 until 2:30 in the morning after bar close got out. And you know what? It was I had been down there before. I mean, we've sent resources down there in the past to assist Fargo with their enforcement efforts down there. And so I had been down there before. We had the one shooting a few years ago down there, and our staff were working down there that night, and they ended up putting a tourniquet on one of the guy's legs. And I had gone down there after that just to check on them to make sure they were doing okay. And it was certainly busy at that time. But this time when I went down there, I was disappointed in the behaviors from people towards law enforcement, just really a lack of respect for law enforcement, law and order down there. I've never really seen that before. You know, just myself alone, I think I was called an effing pig three different times. You know, that was very light compared to what some of the other officers were experiencing with the constant statements like that towards them and flipping them off and things like that. And so I was really surprised at the behaviors down there and just the lack of respect for law enforcement. And that was eye-opening for me. So I got to give credit to the Fargo police officers that were down there. Fargo held one of their shifts over, so they had a number of resources down there. And you know, when you're getting people yelling those types of things at you consistently, you know, most certainly we pride ourselves on professionalism, but sometimes it can be hard to remain professional in those situations. And all the Fargo officers that were down there were very professional in their response to those types of gestures towards them and ridicule, if you want to call it that. And so you gotta hand it to their professionalism and responding for calls for service. And so, but I do have some ideas. I spoke with Chief Cebulski briefly yesterday. He's asked if we could, you know, add some resources down there again here, and we'll do that. I do have some strategies or some ideas that I ran by him yesterday that I'd like to try down there on a few different things. So
Sheriff, you said you were down there a couple of years ago, and then you and a couple of guys just recently went. Did you see big changes?
Well, I mean, so it was kind of strange because on Saturday when I was down there, I thought it was busy. And of course, I'm not down there every weekend, right, monitoring these things. Mm-hmm. The Fargo officers that I visited with said it was actually not that busy. And maybe that was because WeFest was going on or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But they said it gets a lot busier. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time and go down there again, probably this weekend. And really that helps me understand what our staff is dealing with on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. It helps me kind of strategize with them. I mean, I certainly sitting at my desk here and not working out on a regular detail like they are. It's not right of me to sit here and come up with plans here with not speaking with them and getting ideas from them, because they're down there all the time and they've got ideas, good ideas. And sometimes it's just a matter of they just don't have enough resources to try those things, right? So I think being down there and seeing what they're dealing with and being able to get them resources so they can work through some of these things and be maybe more proactive than reactive, you know, responding from thing to thing to thing and being a little bit more proactive is maybe the level that we need to get to. So,
you know, and it's going to get super busy when the kids come back. I call them kids. You know, the colleges come back for school, too.
Yeah, we'll have college-age kids, the ones that are of age, and probably a few that aren't, going to be out in that area of town. So it's good that you guys are obviously proactively developing these strategies before that happens, too.
Yeah, because, I mean, you know, a lot of it's not everyone that's going downtown that is right. causing issues. We all know that,
right?
It's a, as we always talk, it's a small percentage, mm-hmm. But downtown it's, you know, consistently with a small percentage, that's the issue. So, well, yeah, as you guys mentioned, once college comes back here, you know, we got football in the fall, and that's obviously a very big thing here in our area with the Bison and mm-hmm. their successes over the year, right? So people will oftentimes go to those football games and then maybe go downtown afterwards. And like mm-hmm. you mentioned, a lot of college-age kids who maybe don't, some of them coming from areas that aren't as big as here, so don't have experiences with maybe a bigger city-type atmosphere. And so, yeah, we really want to make sure that people don't get hurt and they're safe. So,
yeah.
We're talking with Cass County Sheriff Jesse Johnner. And obviously, you know, with you guys developing those strategic plans, is it a kind of overall response? I know a lot of people have recently been mentioning one of the strategies, and myself included, that we would like to see, or we believe is going to be a deterrent to some of this stuff, is more boots on the ground, just foot traffic from mm-hmm. being seen as officers in those areas.
Yeah, I think it's a combination and a couple different pieces that need to be employed. I think, you know, obviously having additional resources is always going to be beneficial. But I think a strategy has to include an enforcement from different angles, maybe, so to speak, for maybe a bit lack of better terms. And that would be, you know, boots on the ground, responding to calls, walking the beat, being visible, being a deterrent, and then traffic enforcement. Because when I was down there, I saw a number of traffic violations from these individuals that were causing some issues. But because officers were on foot patrol, not being able to respond to those, right? So you got to be able to respond from a couple different angles, and nothing directed towards them, because they were doing the best of what they mm-hmm. could. It just didn't have enough resources to have all those things in play, right? So that's kind of the maybe some of the goals that we need to get to. And I know that the Highway Patrol has gone down there in the past and done traffic enforcement, and they always do a great job and are great partners. So I think it's just a matter of maybe collaborating a little bit and getting some additional resources down there and seeing if we can do some things that way. Because at the end of the day, you know, whether it's Cass County, the rural areas, West Fargo, Moorhead, Clay County, wherever we're having issues in our metro areas where we need to concentrate those things, because a lot of times activity that generates down there maybe becomes violent, that can trickle to different parts of the city.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why we need to get a handle on where it's originating from, in my opinion.
Okay, so when we talk about Moorhead or going into Minnesota, we had the incident that happened in Moorhead, you know, over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you were at the press conference yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Now, were all the agencies involved? Because all the agencies have officers that make the SWAT squad, right?
Correct. So as you saw from the press conference yesterday, and I don't have all the details of the investigation, and it's certainly active and ongoing, so
yeah.
I don't want to give any bad information. But obviously, as you saw from Chief Helmick yesterday in the press conference, he did a great job with what he could do.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that I'm saying that is because this was several agencies and that there were some people that, you know, lost life in this situation. The Bureau of Criminal Investigation is coming in because law enforcement was involved to investigate it. When they come in, they have pretty strict guidelines on what can be released to the media. So that kind of puts Chief Helmick in a tough situation, because I spoke with him yesterday and actually the night before, right after the incident occurred, because I went over to Moorhead PD just to check on my staff to make sure they were doing okay. And, you know, he was limited by what information he could release. And as the chief, that puts the person in a tough position, because the citizens want to know, the media wants to know, but investigative agency is telling him, hey, you can't talk or you can't give this information yet. So that made it tough for him. So I thought he did a great job with what he could release and when he could do that, because he was really at the will of BCA. But yeah, much like going back to your original question there, Janae, because SWAT was involved in the situation. SWAT is a regional team, so it's made up of Cass County deputies, Clay County deputies, Moorhead PD officers, Fargo PD officers, West Fargo PD officers, and NDSU PD And so it wasn't only just the tactical unit that was involved in this, the negotiators, mm-hmm. negotiator unit was there, and bomb unit. And so that all falls under the umbrella of SWAT. So, there's officers there from multi agencies. And so, although I had someone on the SWAT team that was there when this incident occurred, you know, they were not put on leave because they weren't directly involved, although they were on the entry team. You know, we want to make sure that we're supporting everyone, as the Cass County Sheriff's Office, because of the multi-jurisdictional yeah. team aspect.
Yeah.
And this would be a good question too. People wonder sometimes, you know, when officers are involved in high stress situations like that, shots are fired or exchanged, things like that. Are there wellness services and things, you know, if an officer needs to kind of deal with some of those things, get them off their chest after events like that happen, that they can go to people they can talk to deal with those things?
Yeah, most certainly. Great question, Ronnie. The first thing, of course, is that we got to take care of that investigative piece for the incident first, because we don't want to have people get into a room and do like a group debrief before like ACA's had an opportunity to talk to people individually. Because once we get into those group debriefs, then people's perceptions and things like that can change based on what other people are saying and how they perceive things. And so anytime that there's an investigation being done, we need that person to talk individually and not be not have their thoughts or anything maybe influenced by what other people think or what they may have saw. So that's the first important piece. But then, yes, after that, Ronnie, then after that, as that part's concluded and they've been interviewed, then we look to their well-being to make sure that they're okay. And actually, early morning hours yesterday, the PAC team, Peer Assistance Crisis Team, which all of our agencies have members that are on that team, they get trained professionally to do professional debriefs and monitor and check in with how people are doing and how they're feeling after the incident had occurred. So there were PAC team members there that were right on scene that officers could talk to. And then, of course, each agency has follow-up services that they can employ to make sure people are okay. We've got the employees assistance program. And then we've got, like for our agency, we've got the Cortico app, which is an app that people can access 24 hours, 7 days a week. They can do that personally and talk to someone who has experience with law enforcement critical incidents. So there's a number of things in play or in place where that people can access to make sure that they're doing okay.
And then, Sheriff, kind of to that same piece, I know there's been a lot of discussion in some of the media outlets about potentially the victims being kind of put to the side or left out of those things.
Kind of forgotten about, right?
Yeah. What does law enforcement do when we have such a difficult, very serious incident in the manner these do, where people lost loved ones, things like what services do law enforcement typically offer to the victims and their families in these situations?
Yeah, another great question. And, you know, with that, I would first say that obviously we had loss of life, and no matter what the circumstances were in this situation, and we don't have all those details yet because it's still being investigated, we still you know, condolences and thoughts and prayers go out to the family anytime anyone has loss of life. So we certainly want to respect that and keep that in mind. And yeah, sometimes that can get lost or forgotten about. I have a great example for this with the incident in the 300 block of Broadway that we responded to the night of the shootings that all of you saw that we did the press conference on.
That was the assault, right?
Yep, the assault that we responded to. You know, the victim's brother. I've been texting that individual pretty regularly, just checking in to see how the victim is doing. I wanted to make sure that we could explain our end of things and maybe where some of those miscommunication pieces happen, because they had questions on that. Because the family ultimately was the one who notified every one of these injuries and the extent of them. And so, you know, I've been in, I felt that it was my position as the sheriff or my place to make sure that I could communicate with them and explain to them where maybe some communication issues had happened on our end of things with the initial investigation, but then also keep them in tune as to as the investigation goes along, and it's Fargo's investigation at this point. But just wanted to make sure that they that if they needed anything to let me know, and that brother expressed frustrations to me for the exact same thing that you're asking me about right now, Ronnie, and that is they have some answer or some questions and are looking for some answers, and they don't know exactly maybe where to seek those from. Mm-hmm. So in those types of situations, there are victim advocates that we can hook them up with. The state's attorney has victim advocates. Some of the agencies do. And so I was able to yesterday, in visiting with the state's attorney, hook them up with the state's attorney advocate that can maybe provide them some answers as the case goes forward now and is prosecuted. Because he even asked me as much as, you know, the court process, how does that work? And so, you know, when people aren't involved in the court process or in the criminal justice system, as often as we are, sometimes we tend to forget that people don't have the knowledge and know how all those things work. And so we want to make sure that we can provide that knowledge to them and keep them apprised of everything as it goes forward, so that they, as victims or the victim's family, are able to employ different things at different times through the court process to help them and help their cause and their justice piece.
Okay.
Just really sad situations.
That's probably, you know, and this one, I was just taking these things on a little bit myself as well, because I feel, you know, I feel that we knew to get justice for this individual and, you know, in any of these cases. And so I'm trying to kind of be that conduit on this particular one in between the victim and the victim advocate. So
there was an arrest made in that too, right?
Yep, that person, the alleged individual in that assault has been arrested. I think made their first court appearance yesterday.
Okay.
And they're currently, I believe, in the Clay County Jail, or as of yesterday they were.
Yeah.
Because they were arrested on that side. So obviously then they would go to the Clay County Jail, and then we'll have to work on an extradition process to get them over to the North Dakota side to face charges on the North Dakota side here.
Well, and Sheriff, one of the other questions I would have too, maybe you can or can't answer this in general, but we're hearing the term in some of these media reports from, you know, starting with the shooting downtown that, you know, and then the other one later in South Fargo, but we're hearing things like felon in possession of a gun. Somebody used the term ghost gun for one of them, mm-hmm. as well. I mean, are we seeing a problem with illegal guns? I know we've talked about drug trafficking, and are we seeing illegal guns being pilfered into the community?
Well, I think that we're maybe kind of starting to teeter on that, and as your listeners know, or maybe they don't, but ghost guns are firearms that are assembled from parts, you know, that lack serial numbers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so what the difficulty is there, right, is it makes these firearms untraceable. And, you know, and these guns are being made from different types of kits now and stuff that you can purchase. So with guns being untraceable, that can cause an issue sometimes for law enforcement investigations and linking things to other crimes. I'm not sure what we haven't seized a lot of ghost guns here at the sheriff's office. You know, I'm not sure with Fargo and West Fargo, I have to check with them, but it is becoming more of a trend. And, you know, certainly, having these kits and things like that makes firearms more accessible to people. But what, you know, the biggest thing, and that's one of the strategies that I was, visiting with about, with Chief Spolsky yesterday, and that is potentially, and all these things haven't been put into play yet, but visiting with ATF, because they're really the gun experts, but mm-hmm. If we can get them on board downtown a little bit so that they're there maybe immediate right away if we come across someone who's a felon in possession of a firearm or they're committing a crime with that firearm, then sometimes we have the option to take some of these cases or some of these charges federally. And anytime that we can do that, that's a benefit to the community, to law enforcement, and the victim. Because typically there's minimum mandatory sentencing sentencings through the federal system, which we don't have in the state system. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes people can get longer sentences. And when we have people using or committing violence with firearms, then I think that those types of individuals are people, in my opinion, Jesse Johnners, that shouldn't be out and about. They need to have longer sentences because they've showed the propensity to use a firearm and hurt other people. And to me, that's when things become way more dangerous. And that's when people need to, in my opinion, be spend longer time in jail.
So. Which I think, didn't this Tyreek Jones that they're looking for, he had a gun charge against him. And he spent minimal days in jail. He got a very light sentence.
Yeah, I do remember that. As I was looking things up here, I don't remember that specific charge, but yeah, very much in line with what you're saying. There was a history there. So.
Mm-hmm.
And then just the last question I would have, and again, you know, you may or may not be able to answer this. I don't know that it's any great secret. I think at one time, Fargo Police Department, and for all I know, maybe the Cass County Sheriff's Office did too, but there were people that their duties were tasked as either monitoring or observing potential gang activity. Is that something we are potentially dealing with in Fargo-Moorhead, gang activity, or?
Yep. So that teeters on the verge of, or typically the unit that deals with that is our Metro Area Street Crimes Unit, if you remember, because I supervised that unit for a short period of time when that got started here a few years back. Basically, what had happened at that point, or when that unit first got started, was we were starting to see a rise in gang activity here. The Fargo Police Department was very good. It would now be Lieutenant Travis Mosier and Officer Brent Halverson, who left the Fargo Police Department recently as sergeant. They had a really good handle on some of that activity that was occurring in the metro area, and then. At that time, Chief Dave Todd approached Sheriff Laney and the other leaders here, and you know they presented that information that we were starting to see more gang activity, and then the Metro Area Street Crimes Unit was started, and I went over and had the fortunate opportunity of supervising that unit for a little while, and we did have a gang issue here for a while. We hit it very hard, and I felt very good that we had kind of extinguished that at that time. And we kept that unit going the whole time. And so really it's that unit's, I guess, operational objective to monitor gang activity. Now, obviously all of our agencies share intelligence amongst each other. Hasn't really been anything specific to gang activity right now. What I think more of what we're probably seeing right now is feuds between a couple different groups. Okay. I don't know that they're necessarily identifying as gangs, but I don't have the full information on all the investigations, so I don't want to quite speculate on that right now.
Absolutely.
But typically when you have groups like that, that can turn into gang-type activity, for sure.
Yeah, I just know, you know, in our past discussions on the show, we've definitely talked about drug trafficking being up, things like that. We read an article earlier this week in the Fargo Forum about the absolute number of drug arrests, fentanyl overdoses, or overdoses in general, up 82%. One of the people they apprehended is a known member of the Latin Kings. So it just begged the question, you know, are we seeing a resurgence in this activity?
Yeah, so typically what we would see as far as gang activity and narcotics trafficking was, as most people know, a number of our narcotics that we get into our area come up from the south. They make its way into Chicago, over to Minneapolis, and then over into our area. That's that. At least when I was doing narcotics investigations, that's where a lot of the stuff would originate back to. And a lot of the stuff trafficked into our area was done by identified gangs, because that's how they make their money, right? Gangs usually are working off of narcotics trafficking, gun violence, things like that. They were trafficking that stuff into our area. And the people that they were distributing to in our area weren't necessarily gang members, but it was being trafficked into our area by gang members, out of the cities and things like that. So, and to be honest with you, Ronnie, the amount of overdoses that we're having right now, I think are documented as low. And the reason that I say that is you know, Narcan is way more readily available now. It's given out to our citizens. And I know for a fact, in talking to our narcotics investigators and some of the things that they dealt with, and talking to some of people that are in the narcotics world, as far as individuals and suspects, that people are having these parties, if we want to call them that, where they're using fentanyl, and usually what will happen is they'll have one person that won't, the rest of the group will, and the one person that won't, their job is to watch everyone and administer Narcan if someone overdoses.
Okay.
And then the next time that they have the party, then maybe then another person does that, and
they
this person
that
delivers. Yeah, they take turns. And so I actually believe, truly believe, and I've been told this, that people are overdosing, but they're being brought back because of the availability of Narcan, and law enforcement isn't aware of those situations because they're not called to these scenes because someone else is reviving them.
Oh,
well,
and
so I think that there's more reported overdose or more overdoses that are not being reported because of that particular thing that I'm mentioning to you.
And what's the danger, too, because in the same article, we're also seeing that there is an uptick in the permeation of xylazine, which I believe, maybe I'm wrong about this, is some kind of animal tranquilizer or something to the and what it's it's ineffective against Narcan is what I'm hearing. So
Narcan does not work the same with xylazine as it does with fentanyl, so there is a not a reversal factor, and like much like you said, it's a tranquilizer, it's a used for large animals. So and we have seen xylazine in our area. Fortunately, it hasn't been you know, to extreme amounts at this point, and hopefully we don't get there, because then I mean, when we do have overdoses, people aren't going to come back from those. So very dangerous thing, and all that stuff obviously makes it dangerous for our officers, our narcotics investigators.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, stuff every day, because you know, as we all know, you can just, if you touch something that has fentanyl on it and it's in a high concentrated amount, that can absorb into anyone's skin and cause you to overdose. And so, or even airborne particles, if it's powder fentanyl. So, or, you know, worst case scenario, right? Someone comes into contact as law enforcement with xylazine. So all these things are very dangerous to investigate and to work through. We've tried to combat that with purchasing, different types of detection devices, such as a machine called the TruNarc, which can, you don't have to touch the substance or actually analyze it physically. You can use this laser type machine and evaluate it with that from a little bit of a distance, and it can tell you what the substance is, and that's been beneficial. But those types of devices are very expensive, you know, about $25,000 or more per device.
Jeez.
So it's not like we have a ton of them and everyone can have one, you know, so it still is dangerous.
Wow.
Well, Sheriff, it looks like we've kind of run short on time. Any final words for the public out there today as we wrap up our time together?
Yeah, I know. You know, there's been a lot of concerns over the last week and a half here with the violence in our community, and most definitely, I would never, as the sheriff, minimize any of that. It's what we've had happen here over the last couple weeks is not good. I just want to you know, let our community know that I'm thinking of these things every day as a law enforcement leader, and that in our office as well here, and just kind of thinking of ways that we can strategize, collaborate with other agencies, because that's really what it's going to come down to, is all of us working together and trying to come up with a strategy to you know, minimize some of these things. And if they do happen, obviously using whatever resources that we have to immediately get a handle on it, so that our community feels safe. And, you know, I think that that term has been thrown around a lot, you know, that is Fargo still safe? And what I would just say to that is, obviously we've had some acts here that aren't safe. And we just need all of our community to remain vigilant. If if we're putting out information and we need your help, if you can watch for those things. But I don't think that in general, whether our city was safe or not, that people should let down their guard and not be vigilant. You know, if we see suspicious activity, if you see things that don't look right, if you hear pieces of information that someone might be going to commit a criminal act, that you're letting us know so that we can all work together to keep a handle on this thing and do our best to try to keep our community safe. So that would be my message to everyone. But just to let people know that we are trying to strategize and try to figure some of these things out in ways that we can combat some of this violence that's happening right now.
Well, and I would just add too, Sheriff, that you know, as the public, we play a role in this too. Be vigilant. Like the sheriff said, keep your head on a swivel. Always be aware of your surroundings. And if you see something, say something, because that report is as much a tool to help protect the rest of the public as what the officers and the strategies the sheriff is mentioning can do as well. So,
exactly. And if you have indications or you see something on social media or anything, like I said, where a situation might be escalating, that we can get that information as well, because maybe there's an opportunity then for us as law enforcement to intervene and try to prevent something from happening.
Yeah.
Because right now we've been more reactive, I think, to responding to these situations. Not that we don't want to be proactive, but trying to figure out how we can become more proactive. What does that strategy look like? And some of it is getting those pieces of information if people have them, and letting us know.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Sheriff, as always, we know you're super busy. Thank you very much for your time this morning. We appreciate you.